from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today, I'll hear about some jazz that's being performed in Speedway.
I'll get a preview of the Hendrix Symphony Society's upcoming season.
And I'll find out what the Young Actors Theater is up to with their students this fall. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Indie Jazz Fest takes place in venues all over town from September 10th through the 19th. And this year, the Jazz Fest is coming to Speedway. Travis DiNicola spoke with jazz drummer Gene Markowitz about the free event.
Gene, great to have you back on Art of the Matter.
Thank you. Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. And great to have you on right now. There's a lot of stuff going on. Of course, Jazz Fest.
Yes.
10 great days that's going to be going on. But there's lots of other jazz in the city as well that we're going to talk about. I love this city for the great music we have, the great talent we have.
Great legacy we have.
And absolutely.
It continues. You know, I look at... I'm on the education committee now of the, just briefly, Jazz Fest and the Jazz Foundation board have merged.
Yeah.
And so now I'm past president of Jazz Fest. And Kathy Nagler is president now because, I did 2 years. We merged, and she's smarter than me, she's a great lady. And I'm back to being chairperson of the education committee, which I love education. Mm-hmm.
I am a teacher,
and I just love the enriching the legacy of the city with the young folks and going from there. You know, we have people now that are like the mainstream guys that a few years ago were just students like the Tucker Brothers and Sophie Fought. So it's fun to watch this legacy continue.
Yeah. You mentioned the Tucker Brothers and Sophie. I mean, they're some of my favorite musicians in town right now.
Absolutely.
They're awesome. You know, and what's great about Jazz Fest is, it's gone through many different formats over the years. What I really like about the current format is it doesn't just highlight, you know, great local and regional national musicians, but it also highlights the locations where they're playing around town.
You know? And why I'm here.
And why
nice
you're here.
What would we call that transition?
There
what
we
call
go.
That in radio? I'm really proud of the event we have in Speedway.
Yeah.
And I hand it to the folks at Jazz Fest. I had this little idea. I lived for a long time in Speedway. I don't anymore just due to, I got married and we had to decide whose house. But my children, my daughter, Wendy, is a librarian in Speedway. They grew up in Speedway, and I still love Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
And I was part of being at the very start of when they did the redevelopment. I was on the Speedway Library Board.
Okay.
So I still have this little – my heart is there. I love Speedway. And when Jazz Fest changed its format, I had always had some musical – things go on in Speedway, but I asked Jazz Fest folks, I said, do you mind if I use the Jazz Fest brand and we try to plug something into Speedway?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and they said, oh, absolutely. You know, you see what you can do. Well, I was going to have the selfish part of me. I was just trying to find a little gig at Lino's, where you and I have often seen each other, by the Dallara factory. And what it turned into was closing the street and having a big part of a festival.
Just so cool. And this is the main street in Speedway.
Closed where, off.
You know, lots of great development going on
Wonderful.
Both in terms of auto sports, but, restaurants and shops that are opening up there. You mentioned Lino's, which is this, you know, awesome Italian coffee bar and beer and other beverages, and it's part of the Dallara factory out there in Museum, which is just a really cool space. I mean, that's one of the places that, you know, when I have friends that come in from out of town who haven't been to Indianapolis before, you know, take them there because that's just such a, they're like, this is Speedway. And then you get to, you know, go check out, you know, this great, you know, auto racing facility that's right by the track.
It's so unique, and it's so, I think it's just like unique to our city. Mm-hmm. You know, Speedway is part of Indianapolis, however you want to define it. I mean, it's not just Speedway, it's part of Indianapolis, but Speedway is its own little city in Indianapolis, and it just it defines that area. And as a matter of fact, one of the first people on board supporting us monetarily and still is the Dallara factory. Mm-hmm. And our good friend Mark Dallara has left to pursue other things, but he was the Dallara family and the Dallara factory. They are still big backers of our little part of Jazz Fest. And Lena's, of course, and then the local restaurants in the area like Dawson's and the breweries will be there. So a lot of support, and the people are great. And we like it because it brings in different people into the jazz world. You know, the folks in Speedway they love to hang on Main Street and they love the music. And then people come from the surrounding areas. We, you know, people from Zionsville come to Jazz Fest and wherever. I don't want to leave anybody out, but it's just a different kind of venue. It is open to the public. It is one of the free venues.
Right, because some of the stuff for Jazz Fest is free. Some you need a ticket for. This is one of the free ones. So this is taking place on September 18th.
September 18th, and it's on a Friday night this year, which we're really looking forward to doing. And there's two bands. And we start at 6 to 7:30, and it's Bill Langton's Red Hot Whiskey Sippers, which is a fun band to listen to. My friend Rich Dole plays on it, and, of course, Bill Langton. And
great jazz guitarist.
Great jazz guitarist. Yeah. And it's kind of like this Cajun-ish little, you know, fun, high-energy little band. And they play at the Jazz Kitchen on Tuesday nights through the summer on the patio. And then at 8 o'clock, from 8 to 10, is my band I co-lead with Jim Farrelly. And we get a good romping thing going. And it's just a nice, relaxing hang where you bring a chair and sit out there. And it's kid-friendly, which is, you know, in Indiana, that's just because of the laws. It's whenever you can bring one of your kids to see some jazz, well, here's an opportunity. And, It'll be a great time.
So again, and it's outside, right on sort of the main street, in front of Dallara.
11th.
And part of is the street blocked off? Is that what you said?
Yeah. From they block it off from, I believe, like I got to think of my streets there, like through 11th to 9th Street or something like that.
You're still parking around.
You can park around there. Yeah. They block off about two or three blocks.
Okay.
Not all of Main Street is blocked off. And we're in front of, thank you for reminding me, we're in front of the Dallara factory near Sarah Fisher Hartman. And Carpenter. Sarah Fisher Carpenter Racing. So we're just right in the guts of it. Looking forward to it. So
definitely, so bring some folding chairs.
And this is our third year in the Speedway Chamber of Commerce, and Connie Harris are definitely help us out with that. And we have a good time. Speedway people, they just they have this mellow way of rocking out, I guess. You know, it's fun. And as you said, you know, it's fun to just go there and hang now. There's so much to do in Speedway. So
that's very
looking
cool.
forward to it.
So let me ask you this, Gene. I know you're as well as a great jazz musician, you're a fan yourself.
Absolutely.
What are you looking forward to this year at Jazz Fest?
Well,
I know it's hard to pick. But
I know, Dr. Lonnie Smith on the 11th. I took copious notes here. I brought with me.
Oh, okay, good.
I was prepared. on the 11th, Lonnie Smith. I look forward to that. And Diane Reeves is on the 15th.
Yeah, she's great.
She'll be awesome. I actually am looking forward to 12th. People wouldn't think this about me, but Take Six is going to be here, and excellent group. You know, people kind of lock me into the bebop thing because I'm crusty that way. No, I love good talent, and Take Six will be wonderful. Jonathan Butler is another person.
I'm not sure I know him.
And I'm looking forward to seeing that. But I think we'll. Boy, they've done a good job of mixing it up this year. And boy, just go online. I'll plug it to indiejazzfest.net. And their website looks really great this year. And you'll see all the acts. And just pick and choose who you want. It's
some old favorites and check out some new ones.
Old favorites and new ones. There's local artists. There's the venues are all great. One of my favorites, because my wife works there, that is, of course, the public library. Marion County Public Library downtown. There's a beautiful venue there. There's a beautiful theater there that that is almost not becoming secret anymore because we're doing some jazz events, and it's a lot of what is it? The Hometown Roots was just going to be there. Was just there, but I know that Jackie Needus and the library board love to have music in there. Mm-hmm. And this year, I believe Kathy Morris is playing there this year.
Is that the Clues Theater? Is that
I
right?
I think you're right. Yeah, it's called the Clues Theater.
Big high rake and nice stage.
Exactly.
And,
it's kind of, I call it, it's kind of like a formal, informal auditorium because it's kid friendly. Mm-hmm. I always look for that. You know, it's like very colorful, but it's formal, but it's informal because, like you said, there's a nice rake to it. There's not a bad seat in the house.
Right.
And it's not overcrowded with seats, but there's plenty of room for a lot of people. And it sounds great to play in. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they make these fancy places. That's not like a goober, but they make these places and they don't sound good. But but that place is really a joy to play in. And I've listened to things there, and you feel like you're just right on stage with them, which is awesome for jazz, you know,
absolutely.
And other things. It was actually meant for the spoken word, but thankfully, it's good for music.
That's great. The library supports that.
They really do. It's really a good thing. Like I said, this town, the new format in the last 3 years has been real, you know, I think good for the city and places. Mm-hmm. And you just have to look. I probably don't even remember all of the places that are happening.
Well, people can check out the website, get the full schedule and all that. But sounds like the event out at Speedway on the 18th is just going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm proud of Speedway for that, you know. And like you said, you know, like just Leno's itself is a fun hang, and they'll be ready for a bunch of people. So let's make those people busy, right?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Gene, always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks so much for coming in Art of the Matter today.
Thank you for supporting live music.
Travis DiNicola with Gene Markowitz, jazz drummer, board member of the Indianapolis Jazz Foundation, and 2011 inductee into their Hall of Fame. Jazz Fest goes to the Speedway on Friday, September 18th, with free music from 6 to 10 p.m. in front of Leno's and the Dallara Factory on Main Street. Slated to perform are the Farrelly Markowitz Jazz Quartet and the Red Hot Whiskey Sippers, led by guitarist Bill Langton. More information about everything at IndieJazzFest.net, IndieJazzFest.net. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Hendrix Symphony Society operates a symphony orchestra, adult choir, and a youth choir, and Sharon Gamble invited conductor Benjamin Delvecchio and violinist Anne Day Heinrich to tell us about season highlights.
So before we get into this season, Anne, I want to ask you about your history with this orchestra. You were with another band in town for a few years, right?
I came to Indianapolis in 67 to be with the ISO, and I retired from there in 97.
And something in your fiddle hands said, I need to play again, right?
Yeah, it's just something I have to do. So I did different odd jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept busy, and then Maestro called, and I came and auditioned, and I had been playing as an extra with them for about a year or something, and so then I auditioned, and I've been in there ever since. It's become a passion.
And what do you like most about, other than the fact that it gives you a chance to keep playing?
Well, it's kind of like my night out with the boys in a certain sense. I mean, I get out with these people once a week, and we have a good time. He's very funny. And, you know, making music is hard work, really.
It is.
And you have to love it to want to be able to do it or want to do it. And he makes it fun. And so there's the love of the music and the love of the people.
How do you make it fun, Maestro?
I yell a lot.
That doesn't sound like fun.
Well, as one of my violinists said, but you yell nice.
Have you always been a funny conductor?
I
mean that as a compliment.
Well, let's say this. If you have to get a job done, if you can get it done pleasantly, it's better than unpleasantly, if it's possible. You know?
Have you ever had a time when you really wanted to be unpleasant, you wanted to yell at a section because they kept missing that entrance, and Is there a little switch inside your head that says, no, how can I do this and make them laugh but still get the point across?
That is, yes, there is that. There is that little switch, but I could take the Fifth Amendment on that question, too. That's also another way to approach it. Yeah.
Our listeners will never know. They're not attending your audition or your rehearsals. They're only attending the concerts, right?
Well, there was a wonderful I had a situation with a percussionist. We're always taking the cymbals and hitting them with a stick, you know, a suspended cymbal, mm-hmm. instead of a crash cymbal. And most symphony cymbals are crash most of the time. And so I stopped and I looked at the percussion and I said, you know, I heard or read somewhere in a book that you can actually take two of those cymbals and whack them together and get a certain kind of sound. Well, everybody laughed and the point was made. You know, that's kind of the... You know.
Mm-hmm. I hope somebody's taking notes on these... Delvecchioisms, and so they can write a little expose. Hey, there's a fundraising opportunity. So how did you come up with the theme of only the best for this season?
Well, I try every year to give concerts like themes or titles, and I thought, well, let's try just picking, like, you know, tops of certain areas. So we have a Beethoven concert. Well, Beethoven is as best as you can get. Then I have Haydn, Mozart, and actually I think I'm going to do a Schubert and a little bit of Beethoven on Music of Old Vienna. Well, Christmas classics, we do some pops Christmas music, and we do some of the really good stuff, you know, Rimsky-Korsakov's Christmas Eve. There's a wonderful chorus from that, things like that. Northern Exposure is the best. It's actually Finland and Russia, Sibelius and pictures in an exhibition. Irish Festival is the best of Ireland. And, of course, why not close with an Italian thing, you know, Verdi and Friends?
And you might come by that proclivity naturally based on
yes,
your name.
I listened to that stuff when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, how far back do you go in your family to get to Italy?
My grandparents, all four of them came over here. It's amazing when I've read the stuff. I've actually seen the you know, the paperwork and stuff. I mean, 16 years old, married, with $20 in your pocket.
Wow.
You know, you had to have $20 in your pocket, otherwise you were a vagrant and the Americans sent them back.
Wow. Yeah. So the family took up a collection to make sure there was $20
when you
in their
bought
pockets
a ticket,
when they got here.
The guy, whoever arranged your transportation, gave you a $20 bill. You keep this for when you get to Ellis Island. It was very interesting to read about.
Did any of those four grandparents, did they make music as part of their living?
No. But they were music lovers, you know. Mm-hmm. I used to listen to, I picked up Mass Ball some years ago. It was one Verdi opera that I hadn't gotten to, and I said, I think I want to learn this. Mm-hmm. And I got a recording, and I'm listening to it, and I go, why do I know this? It was just, you know, just kept listening to it. Why do I know this? So one day I go home and find my grandfather's old one-sided 78s, and sure enough, there were a whole bunch of stuff from Mass Ball on there, you know.
Wow.
That I'd heard as a kid.
So, and I realize we're sidetracking from your season for a second, but mm-hmm. Anne, how about your family? Did you grow up with musicians?
My mother was a nurse and my father was a doctor, but they both loved music. And when I was a child, not a child, well, I guess, yeah, right from the beginning, I would go to sleep at night hearing my dad learning things like Rhapsody in Blue and some Rachmaninoff and Chopin. And I just went to sleep and I just loved it.
Did you study piano as a child? Or did you go right to the violin?
I didn't study anything. I was told, excuse me, I was told that I used to run around when I was three singing the Hallelujah chord at the top of my lungs. So I think it's a sort of a family genetic defect.
They haven't 100% linked these proclivities, but there seem to be an awful lot of people in medicine who are musicians.
I hear that there's a doctor's orchestra in New York City.
There's one here. IU School of Medicine has a doctor, it's not just doctors, it's a medical personnel orchestra.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So there's something mm-hmm. about the brain.
Mm-hmm. Well, back in Boston, the Harvard Symphony was an excellent college orchestra, and so was the MIT orchestra. I mean, these were people with IQs, you know, in the
through
stratosphere.
The roof. Yeah, something about so baby Mozart and all that stuff. There's some truth to that. Mm-hmm. Music makes you smarter.
I believe that. 100%.
Well, people studying music do better on the SATs, and I mean, just you can check this in schools. You know, it's mm-hmm. just the way it is.
So this season, so if you want to, dear listener, if you want to up your IQ, keep listening, because you've got six sort of main concerts in mm-hmm. your subscription season, but you have some other concerts as well, including a chamber music concert that Anne, you are featured on.
So is Joyce.
And Joyce.
And Andy Van Dyke. He's a wonderful horn player.
Can you tell us about the repertoire yet, or is it a secret?
Oh, we're still working on it, but it's basically made up of favorites of ours from the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there will be maybe a Franck sonata. We're hoping for Brahms Horn Trio.
Yes, good.
And we've got a trio by Stamets. And this is Susie Watt is one of our cellists, and she's going to play with us. She's going to play in the Stamets, and I'm going to do a duet by Beethoven for violin and cello with her.
Fantastic.
So we're just having fun with it.
You know, Anne, I want to ask you, and Maestro, you know, you're both in a position of having played probably way more concerts than you can possibly count. And you probably didn't start a spreadsheet from when you began playing, but what's it like to play and or conduct music that's new to you? Do you have that experience very often?
I do, and I love it. It's fun to learn a new score and, you know, tackle it, because I enjoy something I've done before because I can make it better. I mean, there's always that. There's the enjoyment of making it better. In our first concert, we're doing Leonore No. 3, and I've done that, I don't know, four, five, six times in my life. And so I'm looking at the things. No, wait a minute. Maybe I should do it. No. Did he really mean this or did he mean that? It's new to you because you're a new person. Yeah. I love it.
Do you pull out your old score and erase the markings you put?
Sometimes. Yes.
So it's really a clean slate.
Yeah. Well, you've got to, you know. One of the things I've always hated about rentals, although now it's better, is that you turned in the score. But now you can usually buy a score to something that you rent. And that way I can at least keep my markings so that if I do it again, you know, I will know what I did last time. You know.
And do you get exposure very often to something you've never played?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, this Sunday I'm doing one.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
For the choir. You know, I don't even remember that. I just looked at the music part. And it's with a choir in a church in mm-hmm. Brownsburg. And I've never seen it before, and I've never heard it before, and I got 3 days to get it in line.
Fantastic.
And, yeah. First, you get very scientific, very mechanical, very technical. And that's one layer of preparation. And then you also, in this case, there are words. So I'm looking at the message and trying to figure out dynamics that will express the message. And then there's sound. What kind of sound do we want? You know, and this is another facet of the technique of producing the sound.
Is it a plus or a minus to hear someone else's recording of a work that's new to you?
Sometimes it's a plus. I think it's a plus to know what other people are doing, because you get ideas that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you're going to copy them, because I don't think you can ever really copy anybody. I tried to copy Fritz Kreisler once, and I totally failed. But you take their ideas and you filter them through your mind and through your technique and whatever, and put together something that's your own.
It makes a unique sound.
Well, we did a Verdi Requiem 5 years ago, I think it was, whatever, and I watched it on YouTube, and the conductor did something different with the positioning of soloists, just moved them into slightly different, and I thought, oh, what a good idea, and I tried it, and it worked. So you can learn stuff. I love YouTube, because you can actually see what someone is doing.
And even if you use someone else's idea as a jumping-off point, it's going to come across differently in your venue with your conducting, with your playing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a chance to be fresh and new. What is the piece on this year's season that's going to be the most challenging, that's going to require the most work in rehearsal?
Well, two. Pictures in an Exhibition in February and Pines of Rome in May.
Oh, my gosh. Two great, big, boisterous.
Those are
full pieces.
Yeah, you know, difficult and tricky. Pictures I've done a couple of times before. Pines is my first, so I thought I'd give it and it seems to be the right piece for that particular venue. So. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Gamble with Hendrix Symphony Society founder and music director Benjamin Delvecchio and violinist Anne Day Heinrich. The Hendrix Symphony, Symphonic Choir, and Joyful Voices Youth Choir perform their concerts at various venues in the rapidly growing Western bedroom communities of Indianapolis. Season subscriptions include 6 subscription concerts, 5 talent showcases like the one you heard Anne Heinrich talking about, plus 2 Bring a Friend tickets. You can learn more at hendrixsymphonic.org. Again, that's hendrixsymphonic.org.
Well, a sure sign that it's the end of summer in Indianapolis. It's one darn festival after another. We had Fringe Fest. We had Greek Fest this weekend. It's Penrod Arts Fair, which is a wonderful celebration of the kickoff to the new season of the arts. And Jazz Fest coming up soon. So
that's
we're
right.
going to tell you about
There's
some
a
festivals
lot of stuff going
and
on.
Lots more on our calendar that we call.
What do we do?
What do you have?
Well, of course, again, just to remind you, Penrod, Saturday, right? Mm-hmm. 9 to 5, IMA. Lots of artists, lots of food. Lots of performers, lots of cultural booths, lots
Indeed.
Of fun.
And if you're hearing us on Thursday night, you can hear our Penrod special tomorrow
mm-hmm.
afternoon,
That's
Friday
right.
afternoon at 1.
That's right. We can do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so other fun stuff going on. One of the things I talked about during the Penrod special is the 20th annual Indie Irish Fest, which is coming up September 17th through the 20th. It is going to be a great event this year, celebrating their 20th anniversary, and they are bringing back some of their favorite bands from over the years. And if you were an Irish Fest fan who'd loved the band Off Kilter, who hasn't been here in almost 10 years, well, good news, because they are coming back, and they're going to be there all weekend long. I know they're performing at 7 o'clock on Friday night and other times throughout the whole weekend, and they are one of the best live bands you will ever see, Irish or not. Lots of other great food and fun and other things, so get your tickets now for Irish Fest.
And wear your kilt.
And wear your kilt.
Indeed. Hey, Indie Jazz Fest. We're on the eve of Indie Jazz Fest here. It's actually starting this weekend in full. And one of the cool traditions they're bringing back are the Jazz Fest Pub Creeps. Including, I'm just going to tell you about the first couple, which are coming up Monday and Tuesday, this coming Monday and Tuesday, the 14th and 15th. The first one on Monday is 5:30 to 8:30 at 20 Tap at 5408 North College Avenue, the band Tad Robinson. It's free. Of course, you have to buy your beer when you go there. And then Tuesday evening, same time, 5:30 to 8:30, a pub creep at Sun King Brewing at 135 North College Avenue with the band Jared Thompson and Premium Blend. And there's several more of these if you go to indiejazzfest.net. You can combine a favorite activity, drinking a nice pint of beer and having a little nosh with listening to some great music.
Excellent. That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this may be the one of the most interesting things coming up this month.
Is it
month.
Gourd art?
It's not gourd okay. art, though it does involve some inanimate objects. It is Angel Burlesque's tribute to the Muppets. That's right.
That's just wrong.
Yes, they're going to get mana, 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 nani with their tribute to the amazing world of the Muppets, singing, dancing, and art of the striptease and Muppets. Yes, that's true. They've been voted Indianapolis's best burlesque troupe, and they are going to be doing a Muppet show. And they're bringing in Patrick Wygand, who is a local puppeteer, to amp up their puppetry
fabulous.
Cred. Yes, and full entertainment of Muppetational burlesque. So this is Friday, September 18th and Saturday the 19th at the Athenaeum Theater. There are reserved front row VIP seats. You can get more information at angelburlesque.com. And they've got some audience members who actually have auditioned and are going to be performing as well as part of it. So it should be pretty interesting to see Muppet burlesque.
And that giant percussive sound you just heard was Jim Henson turning in his grave. Just kidding, ladies. I'm sure it's going to be fabulous. It's actually, wow, a once-in-a-lifetime experience, I'm sure.
Sure.
Hey, the Ronan Chamber Ensemble is launching
Kirby.
Its new...
Sorry. Oh, okay. Sorry, sure.
Thank goodness this is radio, because I'm not sure how we would illustrate this if this were television. There's nothing we could do that is anything like the images in our listeners' minds right now. Mm-hmm. All right, to something a little more sedate, but still inspiring. Inspired by Nature is the theme of the first concert of the Ronan Chamber Ensemble of their new season, which is coming up this coming Tuesday, the 15th at 7:30 in the Wood Room of the Hilbert Circle Theater. Music by Richard Strauss, Johannes Brahms, Edvard Grieg, and a world premiere from a contemporary composer. And you can find out more about that at ronenchamber.org. That's R-O-N-E-N chamber.org.
Very good. Hey, something I am very excited about is Dan Wakefield's re-release of his book, Under the Apple Tree. Mm-hmm. This is a great story. It's about an Indianapolis family, early World War II, with the older brother going off to war and the younger brother staying home. And it's a really, really sweet story. And it's been out of print for a while. And it is coming back in print. And Dan is having the national release party at Indy Reads Books on Wednesday, September 16th from 5:30 to 7:30. Of course, he'll be there signing and reading. And there will be apple cider and some great music by Sophie Fott, and it should just be a lovely evening. Looking forward to having this book back in print. Thanks, Dan Wakefield.
Love it. Hey, a few weeks ago you heard about LUCA, or Looking Up College Avenue, which is kind of a educational and fun scavenger hunt, matching what you're looking for are cool, groovy, historic buildings all along College Avenue. And there's a kickoff party for this project at the Indiana Historical Society at the Indiana History Center this Saturday from noon to 2, light refreshments, brief remarks from the creators of Looking Up College Avenue, and a chance to pick up your free copies of the Looking Up College Avenue booklet and leader guide, a great chance to get friends together, maybe if you're involved with Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, a Sunday school class, or maybe you're a teacher. Check that out. Again, that's coming up at the Indiana History Center this Saturday, September 12th from noon to 2, and it's free.
Very good. A lot of things going on with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, because they are opening their season. Their official opening night gala, which is pretty much almost sold out, is on September 26th. That's a Saturday. But if you want, they're actually doing a performance before the opening night gala, which is part of their Lilly Classical series, Beethoven's Emperor, with Emmanuel Ax and Christoph Urbanski is conducting. And this is on Friday the 18th and Saturday the 19th. And this should be a great concert. It is the official start of their 86th season. And then also want to mention something planned for on Sunday the 27th. They're doing their community day again, where they have a concert from 5 to 6 and activities and presentations going on all day from 2 to 5, and it is all free for fans and parents and kids, and it's just usually a great day of being able to see some great music and check out the symphony on their community day with the ISO on September 27th.
Hey, one more item from me. You might have heard John Krull's panel discussion recently about the White River Festival, and in particular about how we, like a lot of cities, have combined sewage and freshwater systems. What does that have to do with the arts? Where there is a free screening of the film Water Under the City coming up at the Butler University Pharmacy and Health Sciences Building on Thursday, September 24th at 7 o'clock, followed by a panel conversation. You'll understand why Indianapolis and other cities have combined sewer overflow systems and what the hazards are and why we need to grapple with this as a city. But a great documentary precedes that conversation. And once again, that is Thursday the 24th at 7 o'clock at Butler.
Very good. And remember, Little Women is playing at the Civic Theater through September 26th. You can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or listen to Sharon and I on
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
motto of the Young Actors Theater is Empowering Youth for Life. The goal is not to produce professional actors, but to produce successful members of society. Travis DiNicola spoke with Justin Wade, Executive Artistic Director of YAT.
Justin, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
Thank you. It's great to see you too, Travis.
You know, I always love having you on, talking about the work you do with Young Actors Theater. We're going to talk something a little bit more specific today in terms of the work you're doing and sort of the direction you're going. I mean,
yeah.
Obviously, Young Actors Theater, you know, provides great training classes and performance opportunities for kids of all ages. You guys have been doing this for a while, but you're really focusing on something new called self-empowerment theater. Tell me more about this.
Definitely. And before I even started, I also wanted to give a shout out to you for everything that you're doing over at Indie Reads.
Oh, thank you.
And I, you know, Indie Reads is like a perfect example of something that, you know, creates this environment that's happening on Mass Ave right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like to call it the new Indianapolis because it's so real. It's like so many visions are taking place in Indianapolis right now. And I see it with our kids, the culture that's being created. Like, you know, and it's like I love that whole area that Indy Reads is around. I feel like that side of Mass Ave does a great job of, like, you know, being an independent artistic side. You know, our kids like run out of the Athenaeum. It's one of their favorite spots to go to. And, you know, this whole self-empowerment thing works that I'm about to talk about because of the new Indianapolis. So great
well,
job.
Thank you for including us as part of that. Yeah. So you guys, you're based out of the Athenaeum. That's where you do most of your work.
Right. Right.
And you guys have been there for a long time. And,
yeah.
And what you how many kids a year do you work with?
So we've worked with like about 8,000 a year now in various ways, shapes, and forms from all over the city.
That's such a crazy number.
It is a crazy number. And I'm going to tell you that we work with some very intensely. To give an example, we had 200 spots in our fall program, which is those are like, you know, intense spots in our program, if mm-hmm. you will. And that on one email and 4 days and no marketing, every spot was taken immediately. And so, like, we're at this point in Young Actors Theater where kids are more and more hungry for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, you know, a great example of how to get into this whole self-empowerment theater thing comes from a mom walking into the Athenaeum one day, and she pulls me to the side, and I get pulled aside by a lot of parents telling me the real story of what's really going on. And she says, Justin, I wanted to talk to you about my son, and the boy's like 9 years old, and he's taking like a summer program with us.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you know, we about 3 years ago lost his brother to leukemia. And he's been having the hardest time. And I just want to let you know that in 7 days of theater work, he got more out of that theater work in 7 days than 2 years of counseling that we've had. And, you know, it's not something that gave me self-gratification because our program's gone so far beyond me. I always tell people, like, it's like I'm not no longer, like, just, you know, It's way beyond me. There's so many people who have ownership over what Young Actors Theater is now.
Sure.
There's so many teenagers and that we work with and different adults who have given their passions to the program that really understand it inside and out because of the intense work that they've done with us, that it's ownership. There's so many people. And so I think of all of them when somebody says something like that. And I thought about, like, this boy, and I thought about a self-empowerment theater exercise we had done with this boy. And just to dispel kind of like what happened and, you know, what we're talking about is,
mm-hmm.
so our definition of self-empowerment is not wanting power over other people and not letting people have power over you,
mm-hmm.
but instead having power over yourself to be self-empowered, to be on the pathway to making your dreams come true.
Okay.
And so in a self-empowerment exercise, we have kids separated into three parts of the room. And we have, like, modern instrumental music playing, say, from, like, the Dark Knight movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hans Zimmer music's, like, playing through the room. And we have one group of kids saying, I want power over other people, over and over again. And then we have another group of kids saying, I let people have power over me, over and over again. Then we have another part of the room saying, I have power over myself. And every single time that the group that says, I have power over myself, the other two groups, like, act like they die on the ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we do that over and over and over and over, and then something starts. Each time they do it, it gets more and more intense, and then we switch up. And that's an example of something that this boy did. And I think that that type of thing in theater, while we're not trying to be counselors, mm-hmm. we're theater teachers, that in actuality, kids really do change through theater. And so, you know, this boy is a perfect example. His brother dies of leukemia. We never know what these kids are dealing with. Like, you know, from no matter what neighborhood kids come from, I said, you know, in a sense, it's like when we look at underserved kids and the problems that we have in the educational systems today, I say, like, you know, their kids from all over are dealing with issues at home, and we never know who's dealing with what. And that programming like this can actually change lives. And so...
So let me stop right there for just a second. So, I mean, what you're describing is essentially sort of an improvisational activity,
right.
which is pretty common in theater classes. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. for people who you know taken theater, they know that. But you know, for people who maybe have never taken a theater class or never participated in theater, and they're thinking, okay, so you know, these three groups of kids on stage mm-hmm. that are acting out this you know this thing about power. You know, what does that have to do with theater?
Right, right. Great question. And here's what my answer is, okay? So we believe that when we look back, when I say we, I'm saying Young Actors Theater studied mm-hmm. this and talked about it a lot, that theater wasn't just meant for entertainment. So mm-hmm. if you go back to the original, you know, Aristotle's Poetics and go back to the masters of theater back into the days of Rome, that they did theater that taught lessons that was also entertaining. And that in actuality that we truly believe mm-hmm. that kids are able to do this and love it when it happens, because what happens is they start to grow as people through theater.
Sure.
And so that we do this thing called self-empowerment theater.
Because it lets them explore emotions. It lets them explore how to interact with people in maybe a different way that's also safe.
Totally. And mm-hmm. and it plays things out and so on. So just to go get into the definition of exactly of what self-empowerment theater is, because we do see self-empowerment theater as something that was created in Indianapolis by Young Actors Theater, and we have a few things that a self-empowerment theater play has in it. And so, one, it's devised. And so devised work is like taking the world by storm right now, and we're big on bringing world theater trends to a world-class city. And there are plays all over Europe right now where there are devised plays. And what it means to devise a play, for people who don't know, is that a devised play does not start with a script.
Okay.
So we start with an idea. We take something that's in the public domain, like Little Red Riding Hood, and mm-hmm. then use the word fear. And so we call it Fear, a Red Riding Hood story. And we're going to explore the theme of fear through Red Riding Hood. And so then we devise a play through exercises in class with the kids and the director. And so the director kind of has is the main person in the mix here. But
so the
play's
really created by everybody who's in it.
Yes, and that's our first part of self-empowerment theater.
Okay.
Second part of self-empowerment theater is something that we believe is something that helps in the education of a child. And that's an ensemble piece where everybody is on stage the entire play.
Okay.
So I'm talking about 30 kids on stage, the whole play. And so what happens is that in a lot of educational settings, we have rehearsals where the main people in the play are the main part of the rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing you have to learn as an actor is to wait, and wait some more. Mm-hmm. So, which I think is, you know, the real truth of theater, right?
A lot of theater, and you know, a lot of time spent waiting backstage, and
and
for a lot of kids, you know, who do theater, you know, half their experience is waiting backstage, you know, either on their phone or doing their homework,
right?
You know,
and so at YIT we don't do that.
Okay,
we at YIT it's everybody's on stage the whole time, and they're completely engaged in the play, and they're reacting. There's lots of group lines, and so on. And this is part of what we call self-empowerment theater, is everybody being on stage the whole time. And we have never had rehearsals ever before that are as exciting as a group than this. Okay. And I also see kids getting better at acting as a result, and they can go into that world where they wait and wait some more in a better way, because in their training ground, which is what YIT is a training ground.
Sure.
We even say we're not a theater, we're a training ground. They all need to work. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, instead of waiting in the youth theater world, we need to work and work some more, because that's the time when everybody's like changing and so on.
Okay.
Next part of self-empowerment theater is every single self-empowerment theater show has words to empower. And so we are within the story, Fear, a Little Red Riding Hood story, we're finding words that empower people on stage and in the audience. We're looking at, you know, YIT is always looking for a kid audience. This is kindergarten through 12th grade programming for kindergarten through 12th graders. And so the whole point is the audience comes in and they see these words to empower and feel the excitement of empowerment.
Okay.
Another thing is that there's quotations of inspiration thrown out in the play. And so every self-empowerment theater play has quotations of inspiration from great thinkers from throughout time.
Mm-hmm.
And so there'll be like, and that even goes in some, it might be like, you know, the Hunger Games author, Suzanne Collins, I believe her
sure.
name is, mm-hmm. that, you know, and a quote from her, and the kids, that the play's moving along, and there's a quote that fits in for that moment, and they turn to the audience, and they all say the quote in an impassioned way, and then say who it was by, and it maybe is up on the video screen as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's quotations scattered throughout to learn, for the audience to learn, and also the kids that are taking place in this. And then last but not least, the last component of self-empowerment theater is true life stories. And so we put in real life stories of the kids at some point in the play every single time that we do a self-empowerment theater show. And so what happens is at some point somebody might say something like, okay, this is all great, but we're just actors. Now let me tell you how I feel about what makes one truly rich.
Hmm.
Like, we recently did a self-empowerment theater show, and we've done a ton of these self-empowerment theater shows, but we recently did one called A Little Princess, What Makes One Truly Rich.
Okay.
And the end of the play, like, I mean, people were sobbing in the audience, and because of the kids were saying one at a time what made them rich
yeah.
at the end of the show. And so that's what ties it all in together in the end, is the real life stories.
It sounds pretty incredible.
Oh, it's – I'm going to tell you, I told somebody, and as we closed the experiment, which was we devised a site-specific dystopian play in the woods for a week in Pine Creek.
Hmm.
We brought 40 8th through 12th graders to the woods outside of Lafayette, and we did a devised site-specific, which means the play doesn't mm-hmm. take place on a stage. It goes from area to area, like this was in the woods, from area to area.
Right.
And as we closed it down, it was amazing. It was mind blowing, and it was the reason that I got in theater to begin with.
Yeah.
I said to a number of parents, I said, this has been the best year of my theater career, and it's all doing stuff with youth, and it's just what's happening at Young Actors Theater right now is the exact reason I got into theater to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've had like special feeling after special feeling. I've never had so many shows go so well as in the last year. There's a vibe at YIT right now that is absolutely amazing. And it's like it all, you know, the self-empowerment theater comes from the goal of wanting to be the most innovative youth theater in the United States. And we say big statements at YIT a lot because it's, once again, it's education methodology where we're trying to teach the kids
sure.
to dream big. Like, you know, one thing I always tell people is we all allow the Colts and Pacers to walk around saying, of course we do, saying, I want to be number one in the world.
Right.
Like, so, like, we've got guys, like, you know, I was eating at Yoke the other day downtown, and in walks one of the Pacers, and I, like, thought to myself, like, you know, I knew he was a Pacer immediately, and not just because of how tall he was. It was because of the confidence he had. It filled up the whole room, his confidence, and he's able to say, I want to be number one in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to teach kids to say that and then still lose well, but to want to be number one.
You know, this is really interesting because, I mean, you know, we've talked over the years about the work you do with Young Actors Theater, and in many ways you've always been doing this type of self-empowering work, maybe just not as intentionally. And for a lot of us, I mean, I think most people who are in theater, you know, who had an experience in theater when they were, you know, a kid, whether it be elementary or high school or what have you, they had that experience where there was something about it that really maybe accidentally gave them sort of the feelings that you're working on very intentionally.
Totally.
And that's, I mean, as you said, like, that's what you fell in love with theater with. I know that's what I did.
Absolutely. And,
but this is just more designed this way. Really fascinating stuff. We need to wrap things up here. But, for audiences, you know, what's their experience on this?
Well, you know, I think the audience is like, so I'll give an example of Josue. Josue Cuellar is a kid from Crispus Attucks High School, and he's in the medical magnet program, and his goal in life is to be a doctor, and he's an ROTC as well. He's this amazing kid, right? And he goes with Crispus Attucks to go see our group that's called The Court, which takes on issues like technology, violence, bullying, and health. And he saw The Court versus technology and how technology affects violence. And he fell in love with the show. Next thing you know, he auditions for the show, okay? The reason he tells me he fell in love with the show is it threw him off. He didn't expect that this was what theater was going to be like. It was conversations like the conversations he hears on the street, people wearing clothes like they wear in real life, people having conversations about violence and with video and technology all around it. And he said, this was the coolest thing that I've ever seen. I had to get involved. And now he's in every facet of our program.
So it's not just the kids who are performing that it's beneficial for, but it's also because you guys perform for a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So and those audiences are benefiting from it too.
I think it changes the way they see theater, and I think it also changes the way they see downtown Indianapolis, and it makes them want to be part of the new Indianapolis, and it makes them feel like, hey, I am part of the new Indianapolis.
That's awesome. Hey, your website for people who want to check out your schedule for upcoming shows?
YATKids.org. Check us out. There's all kinds of new stuff on that website.
Awesome. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much for coming in
thank
here today.
Thank you, Travis.
Travis DiNicola with Justin Wade, Executive Artistic Director of Young Actors Theater. For more information, visit YATKids.org. YATKids.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. when I'll find out about a new show of Douglas David's paintings.
I'll chat with the architect working on the new downtown Cummins building.
And I'll get a preview of this year's Sister Cities Fest. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call What Do We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.